Blog Talk Radio.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. It's Empowerment Saturday. Any way we can get it, y'all. Any way we can get it. Oh yeah. We got Dr. Bruce here recapturing the African mind. Willie Lynch, you and me as a family. Come on, join me, y'all. Oh yeah, hey, call a friend. Better love time. African American empowerment. We're talking about doing a better love thing. Tell a friend. Right now, you know what happens next. There is no better love. Brothers and sisters, welcome to African American Empowerment. It's 365 days of you know what for you know who. Who needs it most? We do. And we have to look at some things. We have to look at ourselves. We have to do the work, right, to return to our rightful state and our rightful place. We're going to have to do the work of working on ourselves. And it requires self-love, right? It requires dedication. Requires some complete and absolute commitment and focus to the cause and the purpose that we have of rebuilding ourselves. Now, some of us are broke, but many of us are absolutely broken. Broken in spirit, right? Broken to absolute pieces, and we got to heal. We do. We got to heal our families. We got to heal our communities. And most importantly, we have to heal ourselves, but we have to do that work. You know, if you're African-American listening to this show right now, you know what we go through, not what we've been through. But think about the effects and the ramifications of the experiences, how that has tainted and jaded and shattered our minds. How do you recover from that? How do you bring back peace to the pieces that are broken, shattered, jaded, hurt, under tremendous pressure in a culture, in a society that you know you really don't fit in? You don't? Right? We want to, and we try hard. We do. But when you think about the plight of African Americans in this country, we got to really look at it for what it is. Now, I'm not saying jump off. I'm saying get strategies in place that's going to help you and your children and your family survive and exist really well in this country if you want to stay. So we have a peace concept, five concepts you got to think about, and here it is. I'm spelling it out. P-E-A-C-E. The P is politics. You need a political agenda. We all do. If we're African Americans, I'm talking about having an African American political agenda that helps us to help ourselves get the resources that we need politically in this system. We need to understand politics first in the American political system, every aspect of it. You got to understand the legal system and teach it to your children. We need to be having classes at home talking about this system, how it works, how we're going to navigate it, and how we're going to stay in and out of it, move through in and around it so that we can protect ourselves and we can support ourselves in the process. E is economics. You better have an economic agenda to understand capitalism and money and how it works, and how to get it, how to save it, how to keep it, how to maintain it. You better have an economic agenda, African Americans. You better have a platform that looks at how we're going to be able to manage capitalism at its best, right? Understanding the financial institutions and how they work, how money works. You better have a strategy. Next is the A. This is for you physically and mentally. You got to take care of your body. It's health, wellness, fitness, and nutrition, culture, and education. All combined, combining them today because you got to get your A together. You got to get on your A game. You got to have your mental health, your physical health, your emotional health, and all of the other aspects tie into. You have to improve the individual, the mentality, the mindset through culture and through education and through development. I say chin out and chest up to our young people. How can we be positive and strong if we're not being taught to engage that way? We got to give ourselves and our people back the confidence that they need. And the only people that's going to do that is us. And we're going to have to do the work of working on ourselves. Do the work. Find peace in your life, in your heart, and in your mind, and let's get to work of working on ourselves. Here's Stan Mack in a moment. We'll be back to Dr. Bruce, Brother George, in just a minute.
Man, Stan, can the deck is packed today. I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you.
Yeah, man, we got the deck.
I just love it when you're able to explain the pillars of the National African American Empowerment Association. You know, when we have institutions that define our own reality, quit trying to get in to fit in, this is where it's at, and this is what we're doing.
Brothers and sisters, we're going to have those institutions that define our own reality. We really, really, really must. But we're going to have to do that work to do that. All I'm asking you to do is do the work. Let's collaborate. Let's get together. Let's use our great, brilliant minds to make a change for all of our people because we need healing. And guess what? It's time for Brother George and Willie Lynch. Kwanzaa segment. Come on, Brother George. Oh, yeah. Mom. Hey, Mom. We ain't going nowhere. I see you rocking out there. Brother George, welcome to the show. How are you?
Well, thank you, brother. I'm doing fine. And you can see me rocking, huh?
Sir, rock to it, baby. Rock to it. What you got for us today, sir?
Well, what I got today is Kuumba, creativity. To do always as much as we can in the way we can in order to leave our community more beautiful and beneficial than we inherited. Kuumba, creativity, finding a new approach to something, innovation requires independent thinking and the ability to apply information in a creative way and allowing for the presence of discovery. It becomes possible for us to conceive and create a new reality. That's Kuumba. Today, I'm going to be reading from the book that our study group is studying out of by Dr. George DeGruy, Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome. So what is trauma? Trauma is an injury caused by an outside, usually violent force, event, or experience. We can experience this injury physically, emotionally, psychologically, and or spiritually. Traumas can upset our equilibrium and sense of well-being. If a trauma is severe enough, it can distort our attitudes and beliefs. Such distortions often result in dysfunctional behaviors, which can in turn produce unwanted consequences. If one traumatic experience can result in distorted attitudes, dysfunctional behaviors, and unwanted consequences, this pattern is magnified exponentially when a person repeatedly experiences severe trauma. And it is much worse when the traumas are caused by human beings. The slave experience was one of continual violent attacks on the slave's body, mind, and spirit. Slave men, women, and children were traumatized throughout their lives, and the violent attacks during slavery persisted long after emancipation. In the face of these injuries, those traumatized adapted their attitudes and behaviors to simply survive, and these adaptations continue to manifest today. Post-traumatic slave syndrome examines these adaptations with an eye towards identifying today those that limit us and those that make us come. And I think that a good representation of what trauma can do and make us do things that are out of character is the way that our young people are killing each other. So, brother, unless you have a question, it's back to you.
Well, brother, I appreciate you. Way to lay it out really well as we transition into Dr. Bruce.
Thank you.
We have to do that work, right? You said it, brother, right? We have been traumatized, and we have to recognize that trauma, and that's why we're recapturing the African mind. So what I'm going to ask you to do, thank you, Brother George, is I'm asking you right now, if you're listening, whether you're on line right now or you're on the line, call a friend. This is going to be a special show, right? We're going to push, and we're going to keep on pushing, but we're going to have to look at ourselves really hard and do an examination. And this online classroom is the method that we're choosing. So I'm going to bring Dr. Bruce in. Y'all know how I'm doing it. Thank you, Brother George. Oh, yeah. Come on, Dr. Bruce.
Bring it.
African mind.
Right here with you, Brother Marvin.
All right, Dr. Bruce. We got some work to do, man. This is a special. And we want to talk to our people about the deaths of Sister Ava Muhammad. I know you're going to do a good job with that. And Prince Asiel Ben Israel, which our people need to catch up on. He's passed away, but many of us don't know. And then the Queen of England. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to turn it over to you, brother. And thank you. Thank you for your wisdom. And lastly, we have professional, educated historians who are coming on the line to educate us on how we can help ourselves. So thank you, Dr. Bruce. Thank you, Brother George. And now, on with the show.
All right, Brother Marvin, and to you and Brother George, and also to Dr. Rogers, who had an excellent show on last week. Of course, I called in on that one, and always thank him for his support. And he tuned in to me week before last, and I wanted to be sure that he got in with me today. So I know you texted him and sent him a number, but I did it too, just to be sure. It's always like having his input at the end. Dr. Rogers, who is former professor at the University of Wisconsin and also does a podcast himself on Tuesday nights at 8 o'clock until 10 o'clock, and we'll announce that number a little later on. But so I want to shout out to all of you all, and thank you for having me as a part of this. And as usual, I like to always be sure that you all are getting something from what I present on these Saturday afternoons. And to those people who are tuned in, I want to reiterate what Brother Marvin said, and that is to call some people, text some people, whatever you need to do, and have them to tune in to the program and to listen. And, oh, you might want to get a pen or pencil and paper or have your computer in front of you with a map or whatever the case may be, and look some things up that we're talking about and just take some notes on this one, because there's so much going on in the world, and I think as we, being historians and trying to be relevant and to talk about the history that I am discussing my book on today, but by the same token, there are so many things going on in the news that I want to discuss some of those things too. But there are some tremendous connections between the chapter that we're getting into today from my book, Recapturing the African Mind, Recapturing the African Mind, which if you don't have it, you need to get a copy of it, Recapturing the African Mind. And in my particular book, we're starting today in Chapter 7. And Chapter 7, actually, in Recapturing the African Mind by Bruce Bridges, relates to some big things in the news that have happened this week and within the last few weeks. And as I said before, historians should be relevant. It makes no sense for a historian, and not just a historian, but it really makes no sense for a biologist, a psychologist, an anatomist, a person teaching theater and drama, or whatever you're teaching on whatever university campus it may be on, it should be made relevant to the students so that they can understand what's happening in the society as it relates to that course material. You see, that's very important. Just to teach and give information in an isolated manner and to have it disconnected or separated from what's going on in the student's life and what's going on in the world is to no avail. For any pastor to be preaching and not make his sermons relevant, there's something wrong with that. So things have to be made relevant, and connections have to be shown and drawn so that we can understand what's going on in the world today. And it makes us all a better people. So, getting on with that, this past week, and to those who don't know about her, and many of you probably don't know about her because you're not in tune with this aspect of the black community, and that is the Nation of Islam, as led by Louis Farrakhan, one of his most dynamic ministers, and as a matter of fact, his national representative passed about 5 days ago, the latter part of last week, I think it was. And to those who have access to the computer and to YouTube, you can look her up. Her name was Sister Ava Muhammad. Ava, A-V-A, Muhammad. Ava Muhammad. She passed about 5 days or so ago, but her memorial was held about 3 days ago in Chicago at Temple Mariam in Chicago, Illinois. Sister Ava was a staunch supporter of the Nation of Islam, but moreover, she was a staunch supporter of black people in America and throughout the world. I had the pleasure of sitting on a panel with Sister Ava Muhammad in Durham, North Carolina, during the time of the Duke LaCrosse rape of Sister Crystal Mangum, and I got a chance to meet her, and I've also gone on the computer and listened to some of her lectures, especially one that she did in Charlotte, North Carolina, and one that she did at Temple No. 12 in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And I saw the wisdom, the understanding, the grasp that she had of history and to relate it to our people. Now, which would have been quite surprising from what I understand that prior to her passing, Minister Farrakhan, while she was living, had made the statement, and very few people knew about it, that Sister Ava was going to eventually be his choice as the leader of the Nation of Islam. Now, how true that is, I don't know, but I'm just putting it out. I have heard that from more than one source, and I think it's true, because he said that it would be revolutionary, her being a woman, first of all, as the leader of the man-dominated nation, male-dominated Nation of Islam, and also she is the first appointed female minister of any mosque in the whole world, even in Saudi Arabia, or even over in Iraq or Iran, those Islamic countries. They don't have women as heads of mosques or temples, but Minister Farrakhan appointed Sister Ava Muhammad as minister of the temple in Atlanta, Georgia, and also the whole southern region of America and his national representative. She's a tremendous sister, so I just had to give some information about her today on the program and would hope that some of you all would look her up and listen to some of her lectures because she's a dynamic Sister Ava Muhammad. Sister Ava Muhammad was from Columbus, Ohio. Also, she was a graduate of Central State University in Ohio, which is a historically black college across the street from Wilberforce University, where a good friend of mine, Sister Wahida Shakur, went there. She often talked about the fact that you had two black colleges there right in the same city, one across the street from another. But Sister Ava went to Central State University, and then she received a law degree. And she was a history major, by the way. And she received a law degree from George Washington University in Washington, D.C. So it's just a little bit about her. So if y'all get a chance, I had to send a shout-out to Sister Ava Muhammad and to acquaint you all with her on this program because it relates, again, to my book. My book is entitled Recapturing the African Mind, and that's what she was about, giving our people information that they're not used to getting. She did a good lecture about Thomas Jefferson, which is on YouTube that y'all might want to look at. So I had to give a shout out to Sister Ava Muhammad. And the other person that I want to mention here in our history that most of us probably don't know about is Prince Asiel Ben Israel. Prince, P-R-I-N-C-E, Prince Asiel, A-S-I-E-L, A-S-I-E-L. I'm spelling it because some of y'all might want to become familiar with him. He died on August the 21st, but there was a memorial held for him in Chicago this week also. Now, Prince Asiel was very active in the Chicago communities. He went to school in Kampala, Kenya. He also went to school in Ghana, West Africa, and he studied theology also at another university, and he was the ambassador for Ben Ami. And most of y'all probably don't know Ben Ami, but Ben Ami was a brother who was a leader of the Hebrew Israelites who in 1971 left the United States of America and went to Dimona, which is in Israel, to start a community of black people in Israel because Ben Ami believed that black people, as we are, the original Hebrews. So he took black people back from Chicago, Illinois. First they went to Liberia, and then Liberia didn't work out, and they went to Dimona, Israel. But Ben Ami, as a matter of fact, I had Ben Ami. I brought him to the city of Durham, North Carolina, several years ago. He spoke at my bookstore, the No Bookstore, and he also spoke at St. Joseph's African Methodist Episcopal Church on Fayetteville Street. Ben Ami, the leader of the community, did. But his ambassador or his representative, Asiel Ben Israel, passed about on August the 21st. But his memorial was held this week. And he was active in the Business League in Chicago. He also was active in doing gang work in Chicago, also with the youth in the Chicago community. And so I wanted to give you all a little information about Prince Asiel Ben Israel, who was also deceased. And these are these two people, Sister Ava and Sister Ava and Brother Prince Asiel Ben Israel, are people in our history that we need to know about, you see, that the news media is not going to report, you see. They'll report SCLC. They'll report the NAACP. They'll report on the Urban League, but they don't give reports too much on what's happening with the Nation of Islam or what's happening with the community of Hebrews that African people are really a part of. We are the original Hebrews. I want to make that clear, too. And so I want to shout out to both those, to that brother and that sister, and also, which relates to our book, all this relates to our book because they were both about recapturing the African mind. And I also want to mention and talk briefly about this death of Queen Elizabeth, which is all over the news, all over the world. Now, and what really made me think about it is a good friend of mine, Brother Herbie White, texted me, and he said, "The hag has died." I didn't know it at the time, but as soon as he found out, he texted me, the hag has died. Now, mostly everything that you see in the media, not everything, there are some other opinions, some opinions leading in other direction, but most of the stuff that you see on the Queen is very, very positive. Now, before I talk for a minute about the Queen and get into the book, and I'm putting all this out there because I really want to hear from some of our callers today. I don't want to hear a lot of, I don't have anything to say, I'm just listening, but at least tell us you're listening, and it makes me feel good to know that I'm giving this information out and that you're learning. That's all it does. It activates me and may make me think of something that I hadn't thought of But if you don't say anything, then, you know, it's just like I'm talking to the wind, even though I know I'm not. But the Queen of England, first of all, brothers and sisters, let me make it very clear that the Queen of England, which is kept in secret, which is kept concealed, the Queen of England, as you know, she died in Scotland. She died in Scotland, the land of Scotland, which was inhabited by black people hundreds of years ago. She died in the Balmoral Castle. That Balmoral Castle was built by black Highlanders in Scotland in the city of Aberdeenshire in Scotland. And the Queen of England has black blood running through her veins, which the monarchy keeps very, very, very well concealed. The Queen of England has running through her veins the first Stuart King of Scotland, whose name was Robert II. Robert II was a black Stuart king. As a matter of fact, when you look at the origin of the word Stuart, it comes from the Norse word, N-O-R-S-E, Norse, Norse, N-O-R-S-E, from the word Norseland or Normandy, people in the north. The word Stuart means black. It comes from the Norse word Savart, S as in say, V as in voice, A-R-T, Savart. S-V-A-R-T, is where you get the word Stuart. So it means black. And in the 17th century, I mean, Robert Stuart, who was the first Stuart to sit on the throne of Scotland, he is was the 17th great-grandfather of the present-day queen, this black man, the first Stuart king of Scotland. He ruled from 1371 to 1390. You see, and also you will find that these kings and queens of Scotland, they go back to Fergus the Moor, the Black Moor, early in Scottish history. And then it goes back to Kenneth MacAlpin, who was the father of Kenneth the Niger, and these were black men and black women who sat on the thrones as kings and queens of Scotland. So all of the royal blood that you see, Prince Charles III, for example, who is now taken over as King of England, he is King Charles III, but he is preceded by King Charles I, a black man, and King Charles II, a black man, who was called the Black Boy. He was so dark. So in the veins of all of these kings and queens of England runs the blood of black men and women who sat on the thrones in ancient Scotland, Ireland, England, and Wales. And some of y'all may have seen the PBS special the other night, even though it was whitewashed. They talked about Anne Boleyn. Anne Boleyn was a black woman, but that does not come out, you see. So I want to make that very, very clear. And when we look at the Queen, I won't get into it right now about how they whitened up the monarchy. But as a friend of mine and I was talking just before the program, Sister Anne, we talked about the fact that the Queen and all of her condolences were not considered favorable. As a matter of fact, when you look at the islands of Barbados and Jamaica and Antigua and and Trinidad and some of the other islands in the Caribbean, especially in the Caribbean, you would find that all of the comments being made by the Queen, about the Queen, pardon me, were not positive comments, because people recognized that the Queen still was the head of a monarchy that sponsored terrorism and genocide and slavery to all of the countries in the Commonwealth that she ruled. You see, I need to make that very clear. So all the hoopla, all of the pomp and circumstance and the horse-drawn carriages and all this stuff on the Queen, brothers and sisters, you need to know how to put it in perspective. You need to understand, as Sister Uja Anya, I want to talk about her for a minute. Sister Uja, UJA, her name is Uja, Dr. Uja, UJA, Anya, A-N-Y-A, Uja, UJA, first name, last name, Anya, A-N-Y-A. She is a professor in the Department of Modern Languages at the Carnegie Mellon University. And she tweeted on this week about the Queen, just to give you another side of it, because all you see most times is all the people are crying and they're sniffling and they're blowing their nose and wiping tears about the Queen. But Sister Uja Anya, who is a professor in the Department of Modern Languages at Carnegie Mellon University, she tweeted, and I'm quoting her now, she tweeted this week, she said, I heard the chief monarch of a thieving, raping, genocidal empire is finally dying. May her pain be excruciating. This is what Sister Uja Anya said. Now, some of y'all may think that's bad, but you have to understand why she said it, which I'm going to continue with this, because it's going to tie right into what I'm talking about in my book, The Effects of Mind Destruction. I want to repeat what she said again. She said, I heard the chief monarch of a thieving, raping, genocidal, meaning death or killing, empire is finally dying. May her pain be excruciating, or may it be terrible, may it be hurtful, you see. Now, when she tweeted that, when the professor tweeted that, Jeff Bezos tweeted back and said, tweeted back to her. You know, you all know Jeff Bezos, the CEO, a former CEO of Amazon. And he tweeted back against her. He didn't like what Sister Uja Anya, the Nigerian professor, stated about the death of the Queen. But when he tweeted against what she said, she tweeted back again. She says, may everyone, talking about Jeff Bezos now, she said, may everyone, you and your merciless greed have harmed in this world, remember you as fondly as I remember my colonizers. She says, may every one of you and your merciless greed have harmed in this world, remember you as fondly as I remember my colonizers. And when we say colonizers, even though I know most of you know, but just so you'll understand, she's talking about, Sister Uja Anya is talking about the fact that Britain has colonized, and that word colonized comes from the word colony, and actually before that comes from the word colon. And we know that in the human body, the colon is an extension of the large intestine. And the colon in the human body, being an extension, the colony is an extension of the mother country, meaning that the mother country in the case of the Queen is Britain, but the colony is Ghana, the colony is Gambia, the colony is Egypt, the colony is Zimbabwe. Those are a few of the African countries. As a matter of fact, Britain controls about 14 countries in Africa. I won't name all of them. But these are the colonies. And then in the Caribbean, you have the colony of Jamaica, the colony of Trinidad, the colony of Antigua, the colony of Montserrat, the colony of St. Kitts. All these colonies are extensions of Britain. This is why they speak the English language. This is why they look like the British and act like the British and have become British themselves, because of their being colonized, you see. So Sister Anya said that this is how I remember my people. In August, she tweeted a picture of herself with Chris Smalls, who's a union organizer who led the first organized labor victory at an Amazon warehouse facility. She tweeted a picture of her and the organizer of the first labor organization at Amazon. And her statements were so strong that Twitter deleted Anya's original tweet for violating what they call company rights. So they took her comments away. But now, finally, Sister Anya again tweeted about the Queen. If anyone expects me to express disdain for the monarch who supervised a government that sponsored the genocide that massacred and displaced half my family, and the consequences of which those alive today are still trying to overcome, you can keep wishing upon a star. She says, if anyone expects me to express disdain for the monarch who supervised a government that sponsored the genocide that massacred and displaced half my family, and the consequences of which those alive today are still trying to overcome, you can keep wishing upon a star. She says, I'm not going to express disdain for the Queen of England. She says, I'm not going to express that kind of disdain, you see. And to show you what she's talking about, in my book, Chapter 7, The Effects of Mind Destruction, I start the chapter off by the words of Bob Marley. So they build their world on great confusion to force on us the devil's illusion. So they build their world on great confusion to force on us the devil's illusion. What does Bob Marley mean, build their world on great confusion? He's talking about they confuse you by showing you this kindly, pious, sweet little queen with her pillbox hats and her matching garments and riding in her coaches aligned with gold. They show you her waving hands, and they don't only show it to us in America, but even more so, I was speaking to another friend of mine today from the island of Antigua, and hopefully he'll call in just to let you all here in this country know the effect and the psychic impact this whole monarchy and this whole queen and kingship of England has on the nations of the earth. It's really encrusted in the psyche of black people who come under the queen. But we see all the bright lights, and we see all the shining carriages. But at the same time, we realize that most of our labor is going towards building up the British Empire. We hear about black people being brought to the colonies as slaves. We understand that our families were destroyed when we were brought from Africa and placed on these islands in Jamaica and Trinidad and Cuba and other islands of the Caribbean. But at the same time, we're confused because the Queen Mother looks so nice and so beautiful and so humble in her bright clothing. So Bob Marley says they build their world on great confusion to force on us the devil's illusion. It's illusionary. You're confused. You don't know which way to go. This is why it's important that we understand who we are as a people. The effects of mind destruction. In my book on page 190, a writer by the name of G.K. Osai from Ghana, he describes the educated African or African-American this way, and I want to quote him here because this kind of thinking that you're about to hear he describes in his book called The African, it comes from what we've been taught in the school systems and what we've learned from our colonizers. Dr. Osai says, and I quote him, the educated African or African-American is a copyist to the pitch of profane excellence. Make sure you understand. The educated African or African-American is a copyist, meaning we copy, we imitate, to make it clear, is a copyist to the pitch of profane excellence. The educated African or African-American is a clever imitator of everything the European thinks and does and says, particularly in outside appearance and observance. What the European eats, Dr. Osai says, he eats, meaning the African or African-American. What he drinks and smokes, the African-American drinks and smokes, thereby securing what, in his deluded opinion, is considered the hallmark of respectability, civilization, and refinement. If his lord and master holds a cigar in a peculiar manner, it is copied. His gait, or the way we walk, his mode of expression, his expletives, the way we speak, his smiles, his laughter, and other mannerisms and peculiarities are all taken in wholesale and reproduced with the fidelity of an Edisonian phonograph. And just to digress a minute, this is written a long time ago. It's when people had phonographs or record players. So this is what Dr. Osai was saying. He says that we imitate in wholesale what the European does with the fidelity of an Edisonian record player made by Thomas Edison. That's how we imitate. Then I'm going on reading the quote here. These are the things the black wretch, in his ignorance and folly, regards as signs of perfect manhood. This veneer polish, and there the lesson ends. Imitation reduced to fine art is much to be deplored throughout Africa. Then I'm going on with Dr. Osai now. These are not my words, even though I agree with him. He says, it is never to the credit of any African to strive manfully to become Anglo-African, Europeanized, or Anglicized in anything. A black-white man is a creature, a freak, a monstrosity. End of quote. I want to repeat that last statement Dr. Osai says in his book called The African. He says, it is never, and I'm saying it because I want you all, brothers and sisters, who are tuned in and who are under the sounds of my voice right now today. And we understand because I, like most of you, grew up in the United Snakes of America, right here in this country, United Snakes of America. I understand that it's hard for us to recapture our minds and to stop being affected and our minds being destroyed, which I'm talking about today, by British colonialism that the Queen promoted. But we have to try. But Dr. Osai says, and I repeat this last statement because I want y'all to really get this one. He says, it is never to the credit of any African to strive manfully to become Anglo-African, Europeanized, or Anglicized in anything. A black-white man or woman, I'm adding that, is a creature, a freak, a monstrosity. End of quote. The effects of mind destruction on African people. Now, I have another quote here from my book, page 191, Recapturing the African Mind. And most of this that I'm talking about came about because of what the Queen and her people of England, the Queen and Charles and Anne and Diane and Diane, Queen Anne and Harry and all of them. The reason that we're in the condition we're in is because Europeans have controlled the press, controlled the books, controlled the curricula that we study in school. So they are going to give us what they want us to know. And they control our minds this way. Elijah Muhammad, back to my book, made the following statement about so-called educated African Americans and how the effects of mental slavery can be seen today and consequently passed on like a contagious disease. Elijah Muhammad said, I quote him, "It is almost unbelievable to see and talk with our people and find in their talk, in this modern rise of advanced education for all, that our very educators and intellectual people desire nothing more than to remain in the free mental shackles of slavery with nothing constructive for themselves and their people. After 400 years, of which 100 of these years the once slave masters claimed they have freed us, there has not been much of an effort in our part to go free indeed," he says. Still quoting Elijah Muhammad. in the chapter called The Effects of Mind Destruction in my book, Recapturing the African Mind, Muhammad says, imagine people out here with BA, BS, MA, MS, and PhD degrees still begging the white man to give him a job and to care for them as their fathers did in slavery time. This actually shows that the more highly educated and trained our people are, the more they want to be like white people and be recognized as one of them throughout the government of America. They are leading their poor brothers and sisters in Mississippi, Georgia, Alabama, Florida, the Carolinas, and other southern states, as well as the northern states, into a more slave-like condition than our parents were in, because this type of slavery, mental slavery, is worse than physical slavery. I want to repeat Elijah Muhammad, because this is my book, Recapturing the African Mind. He says that because of this type of slavery, mental slavery, which we're under now today, because of the Queen of England and her society and her parliament and her power has spread around the world, trying to relate all this to what we were talking about earlier. He says, because this type of slavery, mental slavery, is worse than physical slavery. He says further, Elijah Muhammad, in his book, Our Savior Has Arrived, if you notice in talking to most intellectual black people, you can see readily in their conversations that they want to be members in the white society. They care not what happens to the poor man in the mud. We could do wonderful things for ourselves if we get the idea of social equality and integrating with white people in their many societies out of our hearts. He says, that's the end of the quote. He says, we could do wonderful things for ourselves if we get the idea of social equality and integrating with white people in their many societies out of our hearts. Elijah Muhammad from his book, Our Savior Has Arrived, pages 136 to 137. And one more point before we go back to Brother Marvin here and examine my neck, because I'm still in my book, Hampton University I'm talking about now. Hampton University, missionaries from the north with the backing of philanthropic foundations pump money into Eurocentric education for the newly freed slaves. Again, in doing the quote-unquote godly work of civilizing the downtrodden savages, they went south and opened elementary and secondary schools and colleges. Even today, names like Peabody, Rockefeller, and Rosenwald are associated with African-American colleges. Among African-Americans who are heavily influenced by the plantation mentality of elitism, the earlier established colleges are best for their children's education. These include Fisk, Hampton, Howard, and Morehouse. Consequently, state-supported African-American schools are not ranked by African-Americans as highly as the private schools, but of course white colleges, public or private, old or new, are at the top of the list. So I go a little further in talking about how the earliest schools of black people followed the New England tradition of Puritan conservatism. Where did the New England tradition come from? I'm from page 193 of my book. They followed the New England tradition of Puritan conservatism. The New England tradition, out of Old England. So what you have, brothers and sisters, is in this colony of America, this colony of America is an extension of England. So this is New England. So in my book, I say, as earlier schools of blacks follow the New England tradition of Puritan conservatism and were often run by white schools under black control were basically the same. These effects could be seen in the Christian orientation of the school's curricula as well as on-campus programs. There were always chapel and guest speakers of the Christian persuasion at black schools. Since historically black colleges are part and parcel of a system designed to perpetuate a labor market for America, it stands to reason that their founders were mindful of that objective. I hope you all are listening. I hope you understand it. The curricula offered to the students were not intended to make them, meaning us on these black college campuses, to make them use their minds. Rather, they were intended to go train them to become good little all-American boys and girls. And when you think about it, brothers and sisters, that's the way that we were taught based on what the Queen and people before her pushed out of England. We were taught to be good little, courteous, safety patrols, pride patrols, boys and girls, and follow all the rules and regulations of white people, and we're not to question anything at all. And this is the way we're taught. An excellent example of a bastion of European colonialism used in the creation of the Negro mentality is Hampton University. I'm talking about Hampton in this section now. From the Eurocentric mind of Samuel Chapman Armstrong, that's the white missionary who started Hampton University, which was opened in 1868. Chapman Armstrong was born of missionary parentage in Hawaii. And Armstrong, as well as some members of the humanitarian mindset that we had talked about earlier, masqueraded themselves as persons who were serving God by training Negroes in their schools. You see, brothers and sisters, as I divert for a second from the book, white people felt that they were doing the will of God by training us to become like them because they were God. They thought they were training us to become like God because they were God, since Jesus had been shown to them and us in white skin. You see, back to the book. A heavy emphasis on teacher training guaranteed their version of Christianity would be spread. Chapman Armstrong intended to pass on to the students at Hampton University his European mind so that when the graduates became teachers, they would continue the same indoctrination. And then, as I conclude here, in a speech delivered at the American Missionary Association in Syracuse, New York, in 1877, which was published in the Southern Workman, that's a magazine, Chapman Armstrong made the following statement about the importance of Christianity. And he said, "Drill training, toning up, is the important feature in the association's work. It is making men and women. It is, I believe, a well-balanced, thoroughgoing system of culture aiming directly at the mark, mingling menial and moral and physical training, satisfied to send out graduate teachers as Christians, no matter what denominational flag they may fly." This is what Armstrong said in the book, The Southern Workman. And Armstrong oftentimes invited whites as his guests to Hampton University on several occasions to exhibit the new Euro-African mind he had created, and the program's success clearly showed that Armstrong had totally seized the minds of the students at Howard. The plain dress of the women, the corals, the etiquette, all showed that Hampton was a training ground for the Negro mentality. Extremely apparent in the writings of Armstrong was knowledge of the fact that if students could be Christianized and schooled, their labor would be tremendously beneficial to the Southern United States. And he frequently used supremacist word choices such as savage races, barbarians, and indolence to describe early Christianized black people. This is the founder now of Hampton University. And while people are talking about getting rid of, this is me diverting again, while people are talking about getting rid of the statues around the country of some of these Confederate races and some of the slave traders in England, and statues that were destroyed in Jamaica and some in Barbados, they need to get rid of, we as black people need to change some of these names of these black schools that we have. Livingstone College. Who was David Livingstone at Livingstone College in Salisbury, North Carolina? Who was Samuel Chapman that started at Hampton University that I just mentioned? Who was Mr. Howard at Howard University? Maybe some of these names need to be changed also. Now go back to my last statement before we go back to Brother Marvin. These terms, meaning barbarians, indolents, and savage races, were found throughout the writings of the founder of Hampton University. Armstrong felt the only way the black race could be saved was to train their minds by putting them through the Christianizing and civilizing process at Hampton University. Give it back to Brother Marvin now, and hopefully we'll hear from some new people because we're trying to get new listeners to the program, and hope you all got something from our particular lecture today on the African-American Empowerment Program. Back to you, Brother Mark.
Dr. Bruce, thank you so much for the empowerment. Right, again, it's about recapturing the African mind. It's about education, and knowledge is power. Right, so again, we have a professional historian who has done the work. Go and research it for yourself. The brother has brought you to the Scottish Moorish roots of the British monarchy. He has talked to you about Sister Ava Muhammad, who was a great as well, right? He has talked to you about Prince Asil bin Israel, right, one of our brothers. And we don't know our people, but he went even deeper, right, into some things that we really have to understand. Now, I saw some calls drop off the line. I can tell you that, right? And some people are going to be upset about that, and it's okay, right? Take it like Witch Hazel. Right? Just swallow it down, right? And do your research before you pass judgment. One thing Dr. Bruce said, and thank you, Dr. Bruce, is that we must change our perspective, right? Because we have been completely indoctrinated and conditioned. It is true, right? All we're saying is let's consider to think about how we think about how we will behave moving forward and who we are as we continue to reconcile ourselves from the destruction of our culture and our images and our treatment, not only of each other, but ourselves. And that is the work that remains to be done, whether you like it or not. Let's go to the lines. If you want to call in, I'm sure there are some people who want to comment on this. If you're on the line, right? Join us on the phone line, 845-277-9250. Dr. Bruce is asking for first-time callers. 845-277-9250 is the number. Don't sit back today, right? That's some real good stuff, right? The queen died. A lot of people are hurt and upset about that. But the sister came out and said some really powerful things that a lot of people didn't like. But she is absolutely right. What about our ancestors? And how they were mistreated and how they were harmed. Do we just forget about that and be like, okay, well, let's kumbaya. How about that? How we just, okay, we can just all get along now. How about giving us the repair that we need and the support that we need? Anyway, 845-277-9250. I'm looking to hear from you today. I'm going to go with the calls that we have on the line right now. And hopefully some others will call in. I'm going over to 3347. Here's the expectation. If you don't have a comment, just say, hey, nice job, Dr. Bruce, Brother Marvin, Brother George. Continue to work. I'm calling from wherever you're calling from, and then we'll keep it moving. If you got a comment, let's lay it down. It's family time. It's time to discuss the lecture or your thoughts and opinions. All right, 3347, you up first on the Empowerment Hour. Marvin Rohn, Brother George, do you have a comment? 3347, you up. All right, guess they're just listening today. All right, 9282, you up next. Welcome to the show. You have a question or comment?
Brother Marvin.
Yes, sir. Welcome to the show.
Yes, sir. Let me start by saying may peace be unto all of you brothers and sisters who are in the sound of my voice. And I want to say thank you, Dr. Bruce, for exposing the Queen. I knew I could call in today and not hear all that positive crap about the Wicked Witch that I've been hearing all week long since she died. Because when she died, the word that she died, I said, oh, the Wicked Witch is dead. Just like they said on The Wizard of Oz. Remember that? The Wicked Witch is dead, and everybody celebrated. Again, Dr. Bruce, when we talk about recapturing the mind, and this is Brother Booker in Richmond, Virginia, calling back in again. When we talk about recapturing the African mind, I asked myself a question when I was in San Diego a couple of weeks ago. Why do we, black people, have to wait until we die to see God, to meet God, to meet our Father, our Creator, the Creator of the universe, the Creator of the galaxies, the Creator of the sun, the moon, the stars, the water, the air, the land, that created us. Why do we have to wait until we die to see God? And it dawned on me that the moment we believe that, and I know most of us believe that, the moment we believe we have to wait until we die to see God, that's the moment that the person telling us that story becomes our Creator and our God and our Father. The moment we believe we have to wait until we die to meet God, to meet our Father, to meet our Creator, that's the moment that the person who told us that story becomes our Creator. Okay. We must realize in recapturing our minds, what have happened? What has happened to us as a people? We've been breeded. Slavery was a breeding process that Dr. Bruce alluded to. We like I said before, we got niggas producing, niggas producing, niggas producing, niggas producing, niggas producing. When you breed animals, a pit bull, a German Shepherd, a lion, a tiger, whatever, you take that lion, that cub from the daddy, from the mother, because you know the greatness that's in that lion. You know the greatness that's in that pit bull. You know what that animal, that man can become, something that you fear. So when you take the children from the parents and you breed them, you raise them, you cultivate them, you put your language in them, you put your knowledge, Dr. Bruce was saying, you put the Hampton University in them, you put all of your knowledge, and you take them from themselves. So when that pit bull becomes an adult pit bull, he doesn't know he's a pit bull anymore. When a lion becomes a lion, an adult lion, he doesn't know he's a lion anymore. He looks like a lion. He has the characteristics of the lion. His pit bull looks like a pit bull. He had the characteristics of the pit bull, but he doesn't know he's a pit bull. We are children of God. We have the characteristics of God, our Father, the Creator. All that greatness is in us, but we don't know who we are. Recapturing the mind. We don't know who we are. We look like him, act like him, have the character, the greatness of him, but we don't know. That's why they take the shackles off and tell you you're free, because as Dr. Bruce alluded to, and as he quoted the Messenger of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, mental slavery, I now have your mind. So yes, nigga, go ahead and leave. You're free to go off the plantation. And what did we say? Boss, where am I going? I don't want to go anywhere. Go where, boss? We'll stay here. And start sharecropping, as it became known back then. The moment we believe we have to wait until we die to meet our Creator, to meet our Father, to meet God, is the moment the person telling us that lie became our Creator in our minds, became our Father, right, became our God, brother. And that's
thank
what it's
you,
all
brother.
About. Yes, sir. Thank you, brother.
I appreciate your comment. We're going to move
Thank
on.
You.
Dr. Bruce, you
Thank
got
you.
Any response to that before we move on? Thank you, brother. Thank you for calling.
No, I disagree with you, brother. I didn't say disagree. I just agree
Thank
with
you,
the brother. And I really don't have anything to add, but I just want to hear from some callers, hear from some of these new people we're trying to turn on. Just at least say you listen. Let me know you listen. I need to feel you. If not, I need to feel you.
All right.
So back
let's
to
go
you,
on
Mama.
Down. Thank you, Dr. Bruce. Let's go down to, 3137, last four of your number, you're on live. Dr. Bruce, Marvin Rohn, and Brother George, you have a question, comment, or statement. Where are you calling from?
It went to sleep, didn't it? 3137.
All right, let's go
I
down
am
to 77.
I am here.
Hey.
I am here.
Welcome
hey.
To the show.
Thank you. Just want to thank you guys for what it is that you're doing, for the information, learning a great deal of information, actually that I've never heard before. So I appreciate, this broadcast, and will continue to tune in to empower myself and those in my community. So thank you. I don't have any questions.
All right.
At the moment.
Thank you.
But thank you, sister, for calling. I really do. And tell some people about the program, too. And I just thank you for saying something back to me to let me know that people are out there listening. I know you are, but I just need to hear it. Thank you, sister. Okay, Brother Marvin, back to you.
All right. Knowledge is power. Thank you. Continue to spread the word. 7789, you're up next on the Empowerment Hour. Marvin Rome. Dr. Bruce, do you have a question, comment, or a statement? 7789.
Dr. Bruce, I've been to several of your lectures, and I've heard you several times, but I have to put this one in the top five. I really think you did a wonderful job. I mean, you laid it out there, and for people that don't know about you, they need to find out about you. You are a powerful brother. That's all I have to say. I really enjoyed it, as always. Thank you.
And I thank you for your comment, and I think you're being very sincere with me. And when I was saying some of the things I was saying about our mind and how we imitate our oppressors, you and I have talked before, and I thought about your educated relative there in Washington D.C. and how really what Elijah Muhammad said was true. What the first brother said, we try to imitate everything that our slave master has taught us. Even with our education.
And now I understand when we speak about her how it irritates you so bad, because she is the epitome of what a lot of our sisters and brothers are about once we get education.
Almost like what I said in my first statement, the brother Dr. G.K. Osai, he said that they imitate everything that the white people do, everything. They become Europeanized, Anglicized. They become so much like an Edisonian phonograph.
Exactly. She's the epitome of that, but we just have to keep working on her.
Yeah, but I thought about her when I was reading that before when I was reading it today on the lecture. I'm glad you tuned in too, and I'm also glad you made a comment. That's good. You made a comment. It's always good to hear you, people speak back to me. You know.
Really enjoyed that lecture. I told you I put that one up in round number five, and I've heard you many times on the air and in person. But I really enjoyed today because you were very informative.
And that's what it's all about. Thank you, sister. And again, we just want to educate you, right? You can make the decision for yourself, but you have to understand the conditioning that we've gone through and the things that we think are great and the things that we think are noble, right? When you really look at it for what it is, when we really look at, and no disrespect to the queen, right? But they have done some really awful, terrible, treacherous things. They have.
Mm-hmm.
And we're acknowledging that. There's nothing wrong with that. Thank you, sister, for calling. We're going to go down to 6855. 6855 is your turn. Do you have a question, a comment, statement?
Sometimes they might be on mute. 6855.
All right. Go on once. All right, we'll go down to 7841. 7841, you're next. You're up and you're on deck. Do you have a question or comment for myself, Dr. Bruce, or Brother George?
Hotep.
Hotep, my sister. Welcome to the show.
I'm not new, but I did want to say thank you to Dr. Bridges and all of you. I didn't actually get to listen to the show. But
you missed a good one. You're going to have to go back and listen to that on demand.
That's what I usually do if I miss it. But I did just want to say homage to Dr. Ava Muhammad, who was truly a cornerstone in my education. I was introduced to her teachings in my early 20s. And that feels to me that loss. That's a great loss for me.
It really is, sister.
That's as heavy as a loss of a close relative.
And you know, sister, since you mentioned Sister Ava too, which I didn't mention because we know we can't think of everything. That's why I like to get these callers in. That's why I want y'all to say something to me, because it makes me react again and come back and say something I may have forgotten. Like this sister, she just made me think of something I meant to say, and that is that in 1981, I think it was, I have heard 83, but I think it's 1981, Sister Ava Muhammad, who passed, that we talked about earlier, about a week ago, at 71 years of age, was diagnosed in 1981 with cancer. And she had survived cancer all the way up until now. And they said it still was not the cancer that took her away from us now. They have not reported as to what it was, but she had been given, I think, what did they say, 5 years to live in 1981, and Sister Ava Muhammad just passed about a week ago. And it was said that when she heard Louis Farrakhan speak in Washington, D.C., I think it was, that she was so turned on by the speech, and she changed her life and changed her diet and started working towards positive things and getting rid of stress. And she beat that 5-year cancer. They claim from 81, they say she'd be gone in 86, and she just died in 2022. Last week, you see, so I wanted to mention that about the sister, too, because she's a beautiful sister. And I thank you for calling. That's why I'd like for y'all to say something to Brother Marvin or something to me when he calls your numbers out. Even just say, I'm calling from so-and-so and so, and I enjoy the program. Then that inspires me to come out with more information. But so anyway, thank you, sister, for calling, Brother Marvin. I don't want to keep talking. You might have a few more people that might want to say something.
All right. Let's move on down to 9770, you're up next. Thank you for calling, sister. 9770,
okay.
You're up next. Hey, sister, welcome
hello?
To the show.
Yeah.
Hello,
Cole
hey.
Temp. I just wanted to say that this was an excellent program today. I learned things that I had never even thought about, and I'd like to hear more from Dr. Bruce about the blacks that are in Scotland and Wales and all those places over there. I may have some family members that have come from that area in the 1600s to the United States. So I'd like to have more information about that. And I also wanted to back up his statements about the education, even though he doesn't need me to back him up. But in my own family history, my grandmother had been a teacher in the early 1900s, around 1908. And at that time, this was in Charles County, Maryland. And at that time, the superintendent of schools wrote to the president of Hampton and also Tuskegee at that time in order to get some support or information as to how they should do their curriculum for the black teachers who were teaching in Charles County. And I know for a fact, because I have a copy of the letter that was sent to Hampton, that they were asking what to put in the curriculum. And the idea was that you were training black people to serve white people.
Mm.
Okay. Not that you're training them to start their own business and to be their own boss, but to work for other people, and those other people would be the white people who are in the community. I know that for a fact. And that's why the curriculums are done the way they are, even up to today. In the regular public schools, or I would say normal public schools, children are taught to be workers and not to be bosses. Okay, they're not supposed to be independent and think on their own and do on their own. They're only trained to work under somebody else. So, and that's today. I really appreciate all the comments that were done today, and the information was just phenomenal. And keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you very
Thank
much,
you,
sister. And
okay.
That's a confirmation to those who are tuned in. That's a confirmation of what I said before. She said before I didn't need that. But the fact that she has a letter that was written that stated that was what was supposed to be done, to train Africans in America, train black people to work for white people. And that's what it was, and that's what it always has been. And even when we become independent in terms of being celebrities, of basketball, of rappers, of dancers, of singers, of musicians, of artists, or whatever it is, we still seem to have the mentality that we have to bow down to white people because we work for them. They're our bosses. And that's a mentality that has been spread from the plantation. Thank you very much, sister, for that call, Brother Mob. I'm going to give it back to you.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Bruce. Great call. Great response. And again, that great Scottish Moorish history, we got to understand a little bit more about. So maybe we could do some shows on that as well, Dr. Bruce. I'm going to bring in Dr. Rogers. Dr. Rogers.
Okay, good.
Let's spin you on in. Dr. Rogers, are you there?
He might be on mute. You see his number?
Rogers. All right, we'll see if we can get him back in a little later. But in the meantime, let's go over to 9116. 9116, you're up, you're live, you're on. Welcome to the show. You have a question or comment, sir.
Yeah, peace and love, everybody. I just want to say that we capturing the African minds. Everybody here pretty much established. Like I hear elders here, scholars, doctors, and all this. So if we capturing, who we capturing? I would think the youth, right? My push is always the youth, but I would think everybody here is already captured, right?
But that's why, brother. Brother, I'm glad you're making that statement. That's why we want to get more people listening and more people calling in,
right.
so I won't be preaching to the choir. So help us do that, brother. You're absolutely right. I don't disagree with you. I agree with you 100%. That's why I want some people to make comments. And like sister just called about the educational system in Maryland, the letter that she had about what to teach. You see, when you respond to me and make me, you know, think, then I can come back with something else, you see. But when you don't say anything, when Brother Marvin calls your number and you don't say anything, it's dead ass.
Let me give you something else to think about, brother. Hello? Let me give you something else to think about. If we capturing the mind, when you think about the brain, you got senses. You're trying to capture the senses. If you talking about
right.
the mind, you got, you know. So with the youth, you got to give them something to smell, touch, tangible things, you know, to bring them in, to capture them. If we talking about capturing the mind. You see what I'm saying? So we got to start getting some type of thing about myself. I go through everyday turmoils, just being a person who thinks like everyone on this plane right now. So how can we have focus groups and things, more tangible things to help people going through everyday issues that you're really trying to capture?
Right,
so
and that goes
talking about you have to incorporate the senses when you're trying to capture the mind.
Good point, brother.
And that's something,
that's something that we need to talk about. That's a good idea. Right, good idea.
Absolutely true, brother. Absolutely true. We're going to continue to do that work of educating our people and developing ourselves, right, because we have to do that work. Thank you for calling, brother. Continue to capture the senses right there where we are. Appreciate that. All right, let's move on over to 7974. 7974. You're live and you're up next. Do you have a question or comment for Dr. Bruce?
Hello, yes. Yeah, I have a comment and thank you for having me. I think that this has been a really interesting discussion. I think my comment would just be, I think a lot of times what I've seen over the past couple of days since her passing, a lot among it wasn't her fault. She was a good person versus like the history of the monarchy. And what I would say, and I agree with everything that Dr. Bruce said, and I think, you know, one, we're not talking about atonement, right, for even the things that she has benefited from. And she wasn't a passive bystander in her monarchy. She helped to actively suppress independent, you know, independence in colonized nations that they still rule today. And so that was something active. And we could go on and on about that. But I think that when we think about the, I don't know, so-called particular black mourning, right, it really is an extension of this curriculum of obedience and indoctrination, right? We feel that, I think, a lot of black people who don't know the history of what has happened is that it's another part of assimilation for us, right? It's another part of where we feel this falsehood of nostalgia that has conditioned us to align ourselves with these false narratives that make us feel like we belong, right? It's another extension of us to feel like we assimilate and that we belong for a history that's not ours. And I think going back to what the caller said before, part of that is that because a lot of the history, right, and recapturing our mind is based on those lies, when you've lived in a lie for so long, you become to believe that, right? And so you believe that and you defend it. And you're defending something that absolutely has nothing to really do with your history, but you don't know better. And so I think that's why it's really important to have cultural and relevant pedagogy, curriculum, educational system, particularly for Black kids, is really punitive because it's that indoctrination process. And so we don't trust funds of knowledge that our kids have. It's not important. Their culture is not important. And so, again, until you can unlearn a lot of the things that you learn and have capacity to be able to critically think about that, we're going to continue to do that, and that's what we're going to continue to push out. And so I think that, again, as we think about all of the things, one of the things that I don't hear a lot of people talking about is what could she have done in terms of atonement that she did not do, and that the wealth that was built on the back of Black and brown people. I mean, you're talking about things. I think I saw a quote about the monarchy is now mourning, let's go take back all the things from the British museums while they're distracted. And even though it was jokingly, it is very serious in thinking about what that wealth has built for the lives that they have. So I would just say in ending, Dr. Bruce, thank you. I continue to listen. I'm not a new caller, and I'm actually very close to the host of this show. So I appreciate all of your comments. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sister, for your call. And our time is running out, but Brother Marvin, that's why I like callers, because she really gave me some other things I want to speak on, like with some things when she talked about the land, labor, and resources, and taking back stuff in the museums. And when the caller said something about that not being a part of our history, but indeed it is, you know, like the other sister said who called before her, that she wanted to hear more about that British Empire and Ireland, Scotland, and Wales, and Denmark, and Norway, and how the Queen who just passed lived in Buckingham Palace. Buckingham Palace was built by King George III for his wife, Queen Charlotte Sophia, with Charlotte, North Carolina, and Charlottesville, Virginia, and Charlottetown, mm-hmm. Canada, and Charlotteport, West Indies, was that home was built for her, for this Black woman, by Black King George. You see, so anyway, that's another lecture, but you see, that's why I like phone calls and for people to say something, because it inspires me and it pricks my intellect and makes me go into something else.
All right, I think we lost Dr. Bruce for a minute. Brother George, are you there?
Yes, sir, I am.
All right, let's see if we can pick up from there.
Yo.
Y'all lost
back.
Me?
You there?
Oh,
yep,
back.
You're back now.
Yeah, y'all lost me?
Yeah, we lost you for just a second.
Okay, but you heard most of what I said, huh?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Did Dr. Rogers ever come
right.
on with today, or?
Let's try one more time, but let me reach in. But I want to go back to that quote earlier. We got about 6 minutes, so let me try Dr. Rogers, but I want to go back to the quote. Dr. Rogers, are you there? He may be
okay.
into something, but I think he's just listening right now. But
okay.
if you would, right, can you restate
that quote
the brother listed out all of our actions that are our Europeanized actions, right? And as we continue to recapture our mind, and the brother talked about the senses, right, we have to go as deep as they have gone inside of us to repair and to heal. So if you could give us that quote again, and then
give me the quote from Dr. Was that the one from Dr. G.K. Osai or?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Okay. I didn't know exactly which quote you meant. Okay, you just want to read. Okay, now what part of it did you
could just start from the beginning and,
okay,
and listen
and just
carefully,
take it on,
right?
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
And so it characterizes what we have become.
Okay, right. Okay, Dr. G.K. Osei, O-S-E-I. One, just some people might want to look at Dr. G.K. Osei, O-S-E-I. He was from Ghana. I met him many years ago. He's deceased now. But he wrote a book called The African. And on page 151 to 152, he made the following statement. The educated African or African-American is a copyist to the pitch of profane excellence. The educated African or African-American is a clever imitator of everything the European thinks and does and says, particularly in outside appearance and observance. When the European eats, he eats. What he drinks and smokes, he drinks and smokes, thereby securing what in his deluded opinion is considered the hallmark of respectability, civilization, and refinement. If his lord and master holds a cigar in a peculiar manner, it is copied. His gait, mode of expression, his expletives, smiles, laughter, and other mannerisms and peculiarities are all taken in wholesale and produced with the fidelity of an Edisonian phonograph. These are the things the black wretch, in his ignorance and folly, regards as signs of perfect manhood. This veneer polish, and there the lesson ends. Imitation reduced to fine art is much to be deplored throughout Africa. It is never to the credit of any African to strive manfully to become Anglo-African, Europeanized, or Anglicized in anything. A black white man is a creature, a freak, a monstrosity. Was that it, brother?
That's it, brother. Thank you, Dr. Bruce. We got about 3 minutes left. We're wrapping it up. So I would like final comments from you. We'll go to Brother George, and then we'll close it out for today. That has been a great deal to take in, brothers and sisters. Again, knowledge is power. Final comments from you, Dr. Bruce.
All right. I'd just like to say that the greatest weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the mind of the oppressed. Make it short.
There it is. There it is. Brother George, what you got for us, brother?
Yes, sir. I mean, I think that was a very informative show. And I really, you know, I appreciate your wisdom, Bruce. And you always come with something, you know, more powerful than the last time. And we definitely are going to have to do a show on the Moors in Scotland. Definitely going to have to do that. So that's me, Brother Mark.
All right. Thank you, Brother George, and thank you for the Willie Lynch Kwanzaa segment as well. Dr. Bruce, wonderful show today. The sister said she ranks this one in her top five, and that is an ultimate compliment. Now let's look at ourselves for a minute. A lot of material has passed by today. I just want you to be honest, right, in this moment right here, right? And again, you could be offended if that's your thing about what's been said about the queen and about the monarchy. But the truth is, our people have been harmed, and we have to heal. We have to heal our minds, and we have to heal our hearts. The only way that we could do that is to recapture ourselves holistically. The brother mentioned earlier, we got to reach our kids, and this show and this type of information should be disseminated down into our communities. The knowledge is there, but again, we have to incorporate re-education, right? As we move away from the Europeanized models of how we should function and think and behave and become independent thinkers again, where we can think and emote and live and breathe and be free for ourselves to be our authentic selves. What are you saying, Marvin Rome? Begin to do the work of working on yourself, your heart and your mind, right? Examine your conditioning and become aware of what it is that you think and feel about yourself and others. And then make a comparison to what it is that Dr. Bruce mentioned about how we emulate the oppressor. And then do the work of disrupting the program that's playing inside of you and learn to love yourself and your brother again. All right? We're not against anybody, but we're for each other. Until next week, brothers and sisters, stay strong, stay positive, stay peaceful, and stay productive. I'm Marvin Rome, and this has been the best education you're going to get today. Peace and blessings. Oh, yeah, to that. Oh, yeah.